This is Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today. You're with us on the Ideas Network, and coming up, it's Food Friday. People around the world are celebrating the Lunar New Year or Chinese New Year, and we're going to try out some Chinese dishes at home. We'll be making authentic Chinese cuisine from the comfort of our own kitchen. But first, we're getting tips and tricks on how to get your home organized and keep it that way through 2023. Getting started on decluttering and organizing can be extremely overwhelming, so we have two professional organizers here to help us. How can they help get control of your home's chaos? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. What are your methods for decluttering? How do you even let go of stuff? We want to hear your ideas. And once you've decluttered, how do you go about keeping it that way? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation, or you can always email us, ideas@wpr.org. Casey Fregoso is a professional organizer and the founder of Bracket and Bin Organizing based in Madison, Wisconsin. Casey, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
And Kate Fisher is a certified professional organizer and the founder of The Neatest, based in Durham, North Carolina, where she relocated after living in Madison for 7 years. Kate, welcome back to Wisconsin.
It's so great to be back. Thanks for having me.
And let's start with just an overview or some philosophy. Before we get into specifics, I'd like to hear each of your philosophies on home and what you think a home should feel like and look like and be organized for. Casey, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so my philosophy on a home is that it's just kind of your sanctuary. It's the place you should be able to go when everything else kind of gets chaotic and overwhelming, like outside of your home. So for me, the biggest thing is making your home being like very comfortable. You want to make sure it doesn't bring more stress and more chaos. It should be a place kind of as your refuge. That's what I would think your home should be.
A sanctuary and a refuge. Kate?
Oh, I echo what she says 100%. You know, your home is where you feel safe and it's where you just want to be. So, so when you are in a situation where you feel a little bit cluttered or like things need to change, it makes it feel a little less like your home. So that's where we step in.
And how do we set some goals for the organizing, decluttering, and keeping it that way? Kate, how do we go about that?
Setting goals. Well, I mean, so the goals that I typically come across when I meet new clients are that they want better functionality. Sometimes they want beauty. Sometimes it's just as general as make it less bad. or just like get rid of stuff. So your goal can be super simple. It doesn't have to be something that is uber specific.
And Casey, give us some idea of how we can set goals and decide what we want to change in our homes.
Yeah. So a good way to set a goal is to, I think the first thing to do is kind of be a little bit introspective and think of ways that you can avoid like your own pitfalls. So if you're someone who likes to create piles on every open surface in your home, like with junk mail, books, etc., it's probably best that you try to remove extra like entry tables that you don't necessarily need. Or if you have like a chair in your bedroom that you pile all your clothes onto, maybe just get rid of that if you're never really sitting in it. So I think making goals that pertain to specific rooms and then trying to create systems that can help maintain those goals.
So I have a chair in my bedroom that I've actually never sat on, but all my clothes have fallen there at one point or another. It's basically another dresser. What would you recommend I do with it?
Yeah. So I would just say, take it out of that room, put it in a room that you would actually sit in it. Or I would just say, get rid of it completely, donate it. Or toss it, because it's just like a clutter magnet then. And then anything that really goes into the chair, if it's like, oh, it's not dirty, but it's not clean clothes, because I know that's what people usually put on their chairs. maybe come up with another system of like a basket in your closet that you can rewear, or make a habit of hanging it back up or folding it and putting it back in the drawer it belongs in.
That was my very next question. If I get rid of the chair, where will my clothes go?
You got to find a spot.
Our guest, our professional organizer, is Casey Fregoso and Kate Fisher, joining us to help you declutter and stay organized through 2023. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234 and your thoughts at email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to Kathy in Madison. Kathy, you're on the air.
Well, hi. So my issue is I'm one of those clutterers. But my stuff has got value, and if I sell it like on eBay or something, then it's considered earned income, I think. And that would be a concern for me because I'm on Obamacare. They look at my income carefully for my premiums. So what do you do in that situation? Is there a way of getting money for your stuff you don't use anymore that you know is valuable, but not getting taxed again on it?
Interesting. So cluttering, you've got stuff that's worth stuff. It's worth something. And if you were to sell it on eBay, it would be an income for you and you'd be taxed on that. So I guess this falls under decluttering. And Kate Fisher, I'll ask you, what do we need to consider when it comes to declutter, especially when we're considering that the stuff that we have has value?
Well, okay. So first of all, when you go to sell something, I mean, there are lots of outlets on eBay, or if it's clothes, you can take things around to secondhand stores and whatnot. You've got to set a time, set a date on your calendar and just say, be very real with yourself and say, if I have not sold it by this date, or I have not made an effort to sell it, then I probably am not going to do that. And so it still just becomes clutter in your house and it's still not valuable. But deciding what stays and what goes is a very personal thing. And, you know, you want to think about things like frequency of use. Have you used it in the last year or 5 years? is it broken? Is it gross? Would you actually fix it? And that's another thing where you set a date on your calendar, and if it hasn't been fixed, you get rid of it. Do you like it? You know, a big thing that's around is Spark Joy, you know, from Marie Kondo. And I think that she's fantastic. And, you know, I don't maybe not necessarily think of it as Spark Joy, but just, do you like it? You know, is it a coffee mug with a handle that's too thin, or is something chipped, or is it something that somebody gave you that you don't really like anymore, like that person? So you don't have to feel obligated to keep things that are freebies or things that people gave you.
And I can totally see where Kathy's coming from. But Casey Fregoso, I'll follow up with you how we get through some of these emotions of decluttering and the guilt that can come with getting rid of things that mean something to you or have memories associated with them, that if I were to get rid of these things, I would worry my memories might go with them as well.
Yeah, I do have a lot of people, honestly, like when deciding to become organized, I always say start with things that you're not so attached to. So a good go-to place is like either the junk drawer or your pantry, because usually people aren't attached to like a can of beans. So you can decide if it's expired. It's easy to get rid of. So I always say start there, because then you can start learning the process of it before you get into the things that you have sentimental attachments to. But when it comes to sentimental attachments, kind of what Kate was saying too, I think it's really not beneficial or healthy to keep things out of obligation just because, oh, so-and-so got this for me. But yeah, like she said, like we don't talk anymore, or we're not friends, or I just don't like it. Like I love the person, but what they gave me is not something I like. So I think just, yeah, like being introspective and real with yourself and letting yourself know, like, maybe I don't need to hang on to this. You can even have like a maybe bucket where you're like, I think I want to get rid of this, put it all in there, maybe hide it for a little timer, go off and say, I'm going to come revisit this and see if it is still something that I could live without. But just letting yourself, like being kind to yourself and understanding that you don't have to keep things that you don't want, even if, you know, society or, you know, your family is like, why are you getting rid of that? It is your life. It's your home. You want to make it what you want it to be.
And if I could jump in, there is a thing that I like to call the purgatory box that I've created with a few of my Madison clients. So hi, if you're out there, you know who you are. What I call a purgatory box is for those things that you really are having a tough time making a decision with. And so you put it in an opaque box and label it purgatory. And then you put a date on your calendar with a little reminder that says, what's in the purgatory box? If you can remember what's in there, you're allowed to keep it. And if you can't remember what's in there, then you take it straight to Goodwill.
Oh, that's so a maybe bucket or a purgatory box. Both of those tools could help you decluttering. And we're talking with professional organizers Kate Fisher, founder of The Neatest, and Casey Fragoso, founder of Bracket and Bin Organizing. And we're talking about how to get your home decluttered and organized in the new year. And we want to hear from you here at 1-800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our professional organizers this afternoon? What methods have you found that work for you or don't work? Have you tried the purgatory box or the maybe bucket? Join us 1-800-642-1234. Email us ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Rob Ferret, and we're picking up our conversation with professional organizers Kate Fisher of The Neatest and Casey Fragoso of Bracket and Bin Organizing. They're sharing tips on how to organize your home and keep it that way, and we want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. What do you need to know about how you can keep organized throughout the new year here? You can also email us ideas@wpr.org or call 1-800-642-1234. Okay, Casey Fragoso, now we have decluttered. What's the first step in beginning to organize?
Yeah, so my biggest, or the biggest thing I see people make the mistake of buying right away. I mean, I guess once you've decluttered, you can definitely measure and put the bins in there. But just before you declutter, make sure you don't go out and purchase a bunch of new bins, just because you're going to have even more clutter to the organization that you're trying to get to. But once you've decluttered and you're ready to organize, you'll want to kind of categorize everything so that you know what categories you have, where they're going to live, like on your shelf or in your closet, in your cabinets, and then you can come up with ways to keep them. So if you want to get a bin or just like shelf dividers, I think it just depends what you're organizing, and you want to keep thinking outside of the box. You don't have to do everything in the same type of bin or everything looking the same. And do you have any other tips, Kate?
Oh, sure. I think that accessibility is super important, you know, and think about how often you use something. So the things that you use the most often are going to need to be within easy reach. And, you know, so think about, do I use it every day, every week, every month? The easiest way to go from that is, what do I hardly ever use? And that's the stuff that you're going to want to put in the nooks and crannies that are deep recesses and whatever. And then you fill in between. But always make sure that the stuff that you wear the most, use the most, is within easy reach.
Let's go back to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234. Joyce and Madison, good afternoon.
Hi. This is Joyce.
Hi, Joyce.
Can you hear me? Hi. Okay. I have an unusual thing. I have quite a bit of antique clothing that my dear grandmother saved, and I don't want it anymore, but I'd rather donate it, like, to a historical society or something. And what is the general way to get in touch with, like, not Wisconsin Historical Society? I would feel comfortable with that, but like Illinois Historical Society. Have you got any recommendations?
Interesting, Joyce. And it's another question about the value of things that we have that you know, may have value to others, and how to share that value with others. Casey, any ideas?
I think Kate has an idea.
Yeah, sure. So I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in everything, but what I do when I have a client that has something very specific is I, as a professional organizer, reach out to my network of people and say, hey, because I'm in an association, the National Association of Professional Organizers and Productivity Specialists. It's really awesome. And so I message out to them and say, hey guys, what do you think? And usually there are lots of responses. And so what I would do is reach out to a professional organizer in your area, you know, maybe reach out to Casey, or if you want to contact me after the show, I can help you. Finding a specific resource for you is really important. And I rely on vetted resources from other professionals.
Yeah, I appreciate that call, Joyce, as well as the response. And let's continue with this. We'll go now to Ann in Duluth. Ann, good afternoon. You're on the air with Kate Fisher and Casey Fregoso.
Hi. Just before you came on the air, I was walking around part of my living room with a box, picking up my grandchildren's toys that they no longer play with. I tried to have them help me decide what to keep and what to give away, but they were hoarders and they took some of it home. So I decided to act on my own. And I'm sure their mom doesn't appreciate it. But my main point that I called about is this. I would really rather give my things away to somebody who needs them than have them sitting in a drawer where I may or may not use them again. And we have a center here that provides meals for people, clothing. They have a clothing room for people who are trying to get a job. They have they accept toys and clothing for children. And I never feel bad getting rid of my stuff when I know it's going directly to help someone.
Oh, I very much appreciate that perspective. And Casey Fregoso, there is this decluttering, this organizing, it all comes with these feelings we have that if we get rid of this stuff, we're getting rid of something that could be useful to others or that has value to others or it's got value to me. And sometimes the disorganization comes with that feeling of dread and, oh my gosh, it's just chaos over here. How do you deal with the feelings as a professional organizer?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a saying with professional organizers, like it's not just about the stuff. It's always the stuff underneath the stuff. So I always make sure I'm going at the pace of my client. We never want to go too fast and kind of push past all of the attachments we have to things. So I just tell them to kind of take it step by step, you know, start with the simple things. If you feel like it has a lot of value, but you know your family, you or your family aren't going to use it, kind of like the caller said too, like Ann said, you can look for donations, like donation centers, local shelters. I mean, daycares will sometimes take some old toys that are gently used. You can definitely think of other places to bring those things to. And it does make you feel better inside because now you know somebody else is benefiting from it. That thing is living another life with somebody else. And I think that helps create less feeling of like dread when you're getting rid of things.
It's Casey Fregoso from Bracket and Bin Organizing. Also joining us, Kate Fisher from The Neatest. And you can join us as well at 1-800-642-1234. And Kate, I understand you specialize in your expertise is people with ADHD. What tips can you share for decluttering and organizing for people who have ADHD?
Okay, so I've got it. My daughter has it. and it's a very passionate subject of mine. But typically, I mean, really just neurodiversity in general with people. But with ADHD, your struggles are stemming from executive dysfunction. And so if you read up on executive functions of your brain, it has to do with things like multi-step planning, working memory, emotional regulation, and attention. And so you try and think of ways to combat that. And I think that having a partner to help you is super important. Even if you don't hire a professional, have a really trusted, non-judgmental friend or family member, or you know, if your dog lends you support, that's great too. But your partner can help keep you on track. They can hold things up for you, so you don't have this. There's this thing called tactile sympathy, where when you touch something, it brings back all these memories and you're less objective about it. And that's a way for someone with ADD or ADHD to go down a path and like get stuck. So, so someone can hold stuff up for you, make it fun. Having fun playing games is so, so important. Put on some music. And then also make things really obvious while you're organizing and sorting through things. And then And then when you're organizing things back into your space. So what I mean by that is use some big bold post-it notes that say things like, these are my donations. This is recycling. This is trash. This is stuff that I want to ask somebody about. And so you don't forget which pile is which, or which box is which, and it helps keep you on track. Also, small focus. Don't think about doing like a whole entire room all in one day. Focus on a drawer. Focus on a desk. Focus on something that is small and manageable that can take you an hour or less. And if you take little small bites, then that will help you achieve your problem in a more realistic way. I mean, achieve your goal in a more realistic way.
Kate Fisher from the Need is there. Also our guest, Casey Fregoso from Bracket and Bin Organizing. And Casey, once we've decluttered and once we've taken those first steps in organizing, you know, there is this entropy where it just starts to happen all over again. How can we maintain our organization throughout the year?
Yeah. So my biggest tip for that is just creating systems for things that routinely will enter your home. So I like to always give the example of your child goes to a birthday party and they come home with a bunch of little party favors and things like that. So I've had a lot of parents make a rule that these favors get to live in our house for 24 hours and you can play with them. And then after that, they can be donated, or if they're, you know, used little tattoos or something, they can be tossed. Or even for kids' artwork, you can create a place to display their newest masterpiece. And then after a new one comes in, you can swap it out and display that one. And then you can have a memory box to keep all your favorites. Or you can even use, I would also think of using digital apps and things like that, so that it creates less clutter, physical clutter in your home. Mm-hmm.
We'll have to leave it there, but I want to thank you both for joining us today. Casey and Kate, thank you both.
Oh, thank you. It was great.
Casey Fregoso, founder of Bracket and Bin Organizing, and Kate Fisher is the founder of The Neatest, talking to us today about decluttering, organizing, the feelings that come with that, and then keeping it that way throughout the year. Now, coming up after the news, it's Food Friday, and our guest is here today to talk about Chinese cuisine. Dishes in your kitchen that even I could make. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today. And coming up, we take another bite of the education apple, coming out of this week's State of the State address by Governor Tony Evers, focusing in on reading levels in Wisconsin and what needs to be done to improve them. But now it's Food Friday, and we're talking about Chinese homestyle dishes that our guest says any of us can make. And following the Lunar New Year that began January 22nd, a celebration of spring and the new year recognized by some Asian countries, including China, it might be the perfect time to try some Chinese dishes at home. And we want to know what you think at 1-800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite Chinese dish to cook, to eat? Is there a Chinese takeout dish you'd like to try making at home? What questions do you have about Chinese cooking? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us ideas@wpr.org. Maggie Ju is the full-time New York-based blogger, writer, recipe developer, and photographer. She's also the author of the new cookbook, Chinese Homestyle. Everyday plant-based recipes for takeout, dim sum, noodles, and more. Maggie, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, you know, when some people think of Chinese food, they might think or probably think of pork or fish, but all of these mm-hmm. recipes in your cookbook are plant-based. Why did you choose to use plant-based recipes?
It's actually, Chinese plant-based food has a long tradition because, you know, there is a Buddhist cuisine that was originated from monk food, where they don't eat meat, you know, because they don't kill creatures. And but the food has been developed for like hundreds of years and become like its own genre. where they recreate all kinds of dishes, like, you know, the sweet and sour chicken, the orange beef, and like everything into plant-based by using produce, mock meat, and all kinds of fun ingredients. So my personal journey on plant-based food, actually, it was influenced by my husband, Thomas. So he is a runner and he trains for a marathon and races. And he decided that we should try this out because he heard good things about plant-based food and just want to be like healthier in general. And we started this journey and we both really, really enjoyed it. He found out that plant-based food helped him recover faster from training. And pretty much we can do exercise like soon after we eat. And I don't feel like sluggish in the afternoon. And I reduce my coffee intake. So we started from there.
Very interesting. So this was part of a journey. But when I think of plant-based Chinese food, I wonder, what about the oyster sauce, Maggie?
So there is actually a vegetarian version of oyster sauce, and it's made with mushroom. And it's really, really similar to the original version. So that's your solution.
Oh, wow. So what are some of the basic tools then or ingredients that we'd be looking to have on hand in order to cook some of these dishes?
So I think you really don't need a ton of pantry ingredients because the basic ones are the soy sauce, the chinkang vinegar, it's also called black vinegar. It's like a very fermented, rich vinegar. And the Shaoxing wine is a cooking wine that is made with grains. And like you said, oyster sauce, that's like the plant-based one is mm-hmm. a very good one. And the other things include very important fresh aromatics, which is ginger, garlic, and scallion. And these are like pretty much we use them in every dishes. And I think these are the bare minimum. Basic. And then, of course, there are different things like, you know, there are dried goods like chili peppers and mushrooms and all the other like, good stuff that, you know, like black bean sauce and the chili oil. Like these two, I think, are like really, really going to enhance your cooking a lot. They're so easy to use. You can pretty much put them in every dishes. So these are the basics.
I think sometimes how much I enjoy Chinese food and how intimidating that makes it for me to go try it in the kitchen. And then I open up your book, Chinese Homestyle, and I'm like, I can do this. I could make this. It's kind of exciting. Maggie Zhu is our guest. Her new cookbook is Chinese Homestyle, Everyday Plant-Based Recipes for Takeout, Dim Sum, Noodles, and More. Answering your questions at 1-800-642-1234. We've already got the recipes posted on our website at WPR.org/centraltime. And let's get right into it because I look at the scallion pancakes, Maggie, and I think, boy, there's just a few ingredients here. Flour, water, oil, scallions, some peppercorns, and that's it for making the pancakes. It seems pretty simple.
It is. I mean, it takes a minute to make it, I have to admit. You know, I wouldn't make this for like a weekday dinner just because, you do have to make the dough and, you know, fold them. But once you try it, it's really not that hard. I think the trickiest part is to make the layers because, you know, it's like you want to create that like kind of like a croissant, you know, the layered, fluffy, crispy texture. What you do is like, you know, like again, like making a croissant, you have to put like oil and the green onion, the scallion between the layers. So what I did in this recipe is to make a roux that is made with oil and flour. So this way you can actually spread it out and they don't really like, you know, instead of using oil, which a lot of recipe does, my recipe uses this roux. So make the folding and assembling a lot easier.
Yeah, there's a few ingredients, but it's going to take a little time to put together. But it seems like it's something I could do. And it sounds like, it's going to obviously be rewarding. But I'm going to want a little sauce on that, Maggie. So what kind of sauce are we putting on our scallion pancakes?
So I personally like to salt it. You know, when I make them, I do put salt in it mm-hmm. and it's actually very flavorful. But if you want to have an extra sauce, I think a little bit soy sauce and vinegar and some sesame oil make a great sauce. Like, you know, that you can just do the 1:1 ratio for vinegar and the soy sauce and a touch of sesame oil. And also like a chili oil is always great on everything.
Well, and you actually have a recipe for us to make our own chili oil inside your cookbook.
Yes, that's I always have that ingredient in my pantry. It's in my fridge right now because it takes 5 minutes to make. It's so easy and it's much more fragrant than the store-bought oil.
Maggie, how would you describe the main flavors in your recipes?
Oh, that's so hard to describe. So a short answer is I like savory dishes. So usually it's multi-dimension because you use a lot of fermented things like soy sauce, the wine, and the black bean sauce to create those savory tastes. But usually in Chinese cooking, it is balanced with a little bit of sweetness. So you can find a little bit of sugar here and there. Not saying you have to add sugar into, no, it's not just about orange sauce or sweet and sour sauce, but a lot of brown sauce and those like even spicy dishes has a little bit of sugar in it to balance things out. And I personally do really, really love Sichuan food, the numbing spicy sauces with a lot of chili pepper. I really love that. That's like a totally different flavor profile, but yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it runs the gamut, but balance with a little bit of sweetness sounds delicious. And there's the other recipe here too that I want to get to that we've posted on our website at wpr.org/centraltime. Sesame noodles, and this one, Maggie, comes straight from your mom.
Oh, I love this a lot. It's actually tied into your previous question too. This one is it. I used a sesame paste. It's a Chinese sesame paste. It's a rare, very similar to peanut butter. The unsweetened one. So it's very nutty, and you use that as a base for nuttiness. And you use vinegar, some soy sauce, sesame oil, an aromatic ginger garlic, and then you add a touch of chili oil. It's just like very, very round up. Kind of complex sauce that is really good in everything. Like I use it noodles, but you can usually, you can use some vegetables like a dipping sauce, even on your toast. And my mom likes to make this in the summer because, it's too hot to just turn on the stove. So you just mix the sauce and put on your noodles and that's done.
Right, with the scallion pancakes, it was just a few ingredients, but it would take some time to put together. With the sesame noodles, there's a lot going into it, but it just takes a few minutes to put it all together.
Yes.
And the other thing that I noticed here is you in your cookbook, Chinese Homestyle, you do have substitutions in there. Like you've got tahini as a possible substitute. You've got a substitute for some of the like the cooking wine. You could use some dry sherry instead. But some of this may require us to go to our local Asian grocery store, and some of us may have never been. What would you say, Magadju, for folks who would, want to try these with the authentic flavors, but have a little reluctance about going someplace they've never been before in their own community?
I think I highly recommend to, because a lot of the ingredients are really basic, things like soy sauce and the cooking wine and the vinegar. Once you buy them, you don't need to go to the market for like a year or if not longer. So if you can just gather your, courage and, because I think the biggest challenge is because the markets are kind of sometimes it's kind of chaotic and a little bit hard to navigate. So I tried my best to include pictures inside of the book so you can just like try to find I also have recommended brands so you can try to find things that are in the picture just look for these things. And if you don't have access to an Asian market these days, you can actually find most of these ingredients on Amazon. The only thing you cannot shop is the wine because it's alcohol. It's like it has shipping issues. But the rest of the stuff you can, all of them you can find on Amazon.
In your sesame noodles, Maggie, you also include the option of having noodles that you can buy in the store or making them homemade. You've got a homemade noodle recipe in there. Seems a little daunting. Can you make it simple for us?
It's not that hard. You mix the dough by putting together the flour and the water. It's just a dough. You add a pinch of salt
It's
for the
just a dough.
structure. It's just a dough. And you roll it out. You just roll it. It's not that hard. And then the way you cut it is like after you roll it out, you kind of fold it. So you don't have to cut like very long lines. So you can just cut them and unfold it. It's become noodles. It's not that hard.
That's the way it looks. And I'm looking forward to trying this. Our guest is Maggie Ju. She is a full-time New York-based blogger, writer, recipe developer, and photographer. But she's also the author of the new cookbook, Chinese Homestyle, Everyday Plant-Based Recipes for Takeout, Dim Sum Noodles, and More. So join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us ideas@wpr.org with your questions for our Food Friday and our guest, Maggie Ju, as we continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today, and we're picking up our talk with Maggie Zhu. She is with us for Food Friday to talk about her new cookbook, Chinese Homestyle, everyday plant-based recipes for takeout, dim sum, noodles, and more. And we want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. What questions do you have about cooking Chinese cuisine? Have you tried making Chinese dishes at home before? How did it go? Join us, 1-800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. And before we get to our last recipe here, Maggie, got an email from Grant who asks if you could offer a favorite Hunan hot and sour vegetable noodle salad recipe. Hunan hot and sour vegetable noodle salad recipe. You got one of those in the cookbook?
Oh, God, I don't have that one. Sorry.
But I know you've got salads in the cookbook, and I know you've got some hot and sour, right?
Yeah, I have a hot and sour soup, and I have several noodle dishes here. But yeah, I don't have that one.
Well, let's get to vegetable chow fun. Again, the recipes can be found at WPR.org/centraltime or in our guest new book, Chinese Homestyle. What goes into making vegetable chow fun, Maggie?
So I want to emphasize on the rice first. So when you make a chow fun to be the rice to be like have the grains are separated and they're crispy. So I like to use medium grain like jasmine rice or a medium white rice to use for this. And what you want to do is to, you know, not use freshly cooked rice. You actually want them to be a little bit stale. And what you can do is just to put them in your, put the rice in your fridge or freezer for a couple of days, and it will dry out the surface for a little bit, which is perfect for fried rice. So in this recipe, I used like mixed vegetables and some fried tofu, which gives it give the rice a really fun texture. And if you don't have the fried tofu is a special ingredient. So this one you have to get from an Asian market. But no, don't worry. If you don't have this ingredient, I have a fried tofu. It's actually, you don't even need oil to fry those tofu in your oven. And you can make those like really crunchy, crispy bites. And then I use some aromatics like garlic and scallion. Those are the seasoning that make your rice really, really fragrant. And a touch of soy sauce to season the rice. And my secret ingredient here is the black bean sauce.
Yeah.
I have the homemade black bean sauce in my first chapter. You can use a store-bought as well, but I really love the homemade one because it's very, very fragrant.
I have never been able to make a fried rice at home in a way that I thought, well, that's good. Not even it hasn't even met the good standard. I always wondered what I did wrong. And you say that some stale rice might be the key for that?
Yeah. So, you know, it's sometimes you just have to put it in the fridge for a couple of days. My favorite way, you know, if you order some takeout and have leftover rice, just leave them in those paper containers and they kind of dry out a little bit. And then they're perfect for fried rice.
I very much appreciate that. And there's a lot of mushrooms in the vegetable chow fun. Tell us, and in other recipes throughout your cookbook, Maggie, why are you such a big fan of the mushrooms? What do you find in these that add to your cooking?
I love mushrooms because they're just so tasty. It has this umami flavor. I think they have really fun textures and they absorb a lot of like sauce really, really well. And you can make them into all different kinds of things. So I have, like, for example, I have the teriyaki mushroom recipe in the book. And you just it's kind of like making a braised mushroom, but then it soak up all the flavors and it tastes like meat.
I'll have to give that a try. And I want to go back to tofu because here's another hang up that I find every now and again with my tofu. If you can make crispy tofu, I want to be able to make crispy tofu. And sometimes I find myself coming up short. Maggie, what's the key to a crispy tofu?
I think the key is to lightly coat them. So the way to make it very flavorful is to marinate the tofu for a little bit. So I like to use some soy sauce and maple syrup for a really brief marinating. and then you dust the tofu with a coat of cornstarch. So, and when you pan fry with, you know, when they are coated, you can just pan fry the tofu. They will become so crunchy and crispy.
Maggie Zhu is a full-time New York-based blogger, writer, recipe developer, and the author of the new cookbook, Chinese Homestyle, Everyday Plant-Based Recipes for Takeout, Dim Sum, Noodles, and More. Still time for your questions and your stories about trying to make Chinese cuisine in your kitchen at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. And since these are all plant-based in your book, I want to ask you about the best way to go about tempeh. Maggie, what can I do with tempeh to make it feel like it's coming from, you know, that it's authentic?
So tempeh is actually not a traditional Chinese ingredient, but I personally really like it. It's a Southeast Asian thing, I think. We don't use that much in Chinese cooking, but I love use tempeh because they have this really great texture and they don't fall apart easily like tofu. So it's because they are like fermented soybeans, and they do have this like fermented taste that I'd say, you know, I like to use tempeh in a strong, like very savory sauce. So you don't have, you know, because otherwise sometimes it has this smell that maybe people don't like. So, for example, I use it in my fried sauce noodles. It's like a Beijing style fried sauce noodles as a base. It's like to replace the meat. So I braise those tempeh bites with mushroom in my black bean sauce, and it just soak up all the flavors, and it has this nice crunchy soft texture, and it goes so well in the noodle sauce. And I also have a recipe, a straight cup. It's a kind of like straight cup chicken, but I use tempeh instead. Ooh. It's also the tempeh is like braised. You know, you break them apart, kind of crumble it, and then you braise them in this nice soy sauce, wine, and sugar, and in this like really nice brown sauce, and finish up with aromatics. It gives it like a very rich taste. That's how I like to use it.
Let's go to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234, where Perry and Oconto are standing by. Perry, you're on the air with Maggie Zhu.
All right, great. Hey, happy Chinese New Year also. My question is this. Is there any kind of recipe that you could recommend kind of as a one-stop shop as far as something that you want to make and maybe eat several meals from that's fairly simple but filling?
That's a great question. Something you could throw into like a one-pot dish that you could end up eating for the next 3 or 4 days down the road. Maggie?
Oh, I think actually the sesame noodle is one of the great one because you can make a big batch of sauce and then they stay like stay in the fridge for a week, no problem. And you can mix it with noodles, with other vegetables and you know, even if after you mix with noodle, they stay really well for a couple of days. And you can actually throw in different things like vegetables, and you can even throw in like meat. Like I made this book plant-based, but I really designed it for everybody to enjoy. So that I think that's a great option.
You also have a recipe in your cookbook, Chinese Homestyle, for Dan Dan noodles, which I am dying to try. And that I would believe you could make and end up eating for a week.
Yes.
If you don't eat too much. Hey, Perry mentioned the Lunar New Year. Do you have some food memories or traditions that you really enjoy during the New Year, Maggie?
Oh, it's one of my favorite holiday because it's kind of like Thanksgiving in the U.S. So family, like everybody gather together and we cook and share really a lot of food. And my family have the tradition of making a lot of dumplings and we just wrap them together, make hundreds of them and eat like throughout the day.
Oh, hundreds of dumplings.
Yep.
I am getting hungry this afternoon. So to wrap this all up, what are you cooking next, Maggie?
Oh, what I'm cooking? This week I'm baking.
Oh.
I'm baking some red bean buns that is, you know, have a milk bread texture, but with a sweet red bean paste filling inside.
Red bean buns. That wouldn't be in your cookbook, would you? Or will it be in the next one?
Maybe the next one. I have this really nice red bean filled mochi in this book. You should check that out.
I look forward to checking out many of them. And Maggie, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for reminding me. It's such a pleasure.
Yes. Maggie Ju is a full-time New York-based blogger and writer, recipe developer, photographer, and she joined us for our Food Friday today to talk about her new cookbook, Chinese Homestyle, Everyday Plant-Based Recipes for Takeout, Dim Sum, Noodles, and more, obviously. And you can continue this conversation if you've got comments, thoughts, or you've got some recipes you want to try. You can email us, ideas@WPR.org. Coming up on Monday on The Morning Show, it's your State Capitol Report with a new chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Kate Archer Ken also talks with the state's opioid initiatives director about Wisconsin's record high overdose deaths and building a real road to recovery. That's Monday.